This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have with me right here in the studio, Joanne Boyer. She's the author of a new book called Wisdom of Progressive Voices. Joanne Boyer, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I was drawn to this book by its title, and I was very interested in reading it. But before we get into the book itself, why don't you tell me and the person who's listening at home or in his or her car or office a little bit about your background.
We have a 35-plus year writing, marketing, communications background, starting with daily newspapers. I like my little entryway as I was the first woman sports reporter back in the 1970s at several daily newspapers across the country.
What was that like?
That was fun. That was exciting. It was still when newspapers were really very much more a vibrant part of the communities, and it just was always a sports enthusiast growing up here in Wisconsin. And everything from, you know, the Packers to Wisconsin football. It was just very much part of our lives.
Were you an athlete too yourself?
Not so much. There was no, not much with women's athletics. I always say my high school girls' basketball was the stationary forwards that you didn't move across the center line. So we've come a long way, at least in that respect.
And what was it like being a sports reporter as a woman in the 70s? Was the sexism just rampant?
I personally didn't experience it that much, and perhaps maybe it was because I was so knowledgeable about what was going on that they absolutely recognized that I understood the subject matter and I understood newspapers. So I fit in quite nicely, and it was still the closed locker rooms, which have changed, and you'd find that occasionally you had to do an interview outside because they didn't want you in, but you know, you went with what you had, and it's moved obviously well past that in the last 30 years.
Yeah, what do you make of the progress of women reporters in sports now?
It's amazing. There were literally just a handful when I started, and almost none in TV broadcast journalism. And then that became an avenue. And then obviously, it just once the doors are opened and the barriers break down, it's pretty obvious that that's going to continue to be that way.
And why'd you give up sports reporting?
In a nutshell, it is when I ended up getting married, there were no current positions open, and so then I moved on to the trade publications and magazine writing, and you just take the avenue of communication that's open for you. We were in a city that just wasn't looking for a sports reporter at that time.
Well, that's too bad. Well, tell me about this book, Wisdom of Progressive Voices. When did you first decide to do such a book?
It kind of came about just about a little over a year ago where, you know, you're struggling with sort of the political climate of what was the election year last year of 2010. You'd listen and you'd sort of say to yourself, wait a minute, I remember a time where it wasn't like this. And why is the progressive voice all of a sudden not being heard? And how has the conversation shifted so? And I just said, we really need to reclaim our progressive heritage, and kind of the thought process just started going, and you make the list of all the great progressives that you were aware of, and you said, wait a minute, we need to string this together, and we need to make it into more of a comprehensive story that people can, and yet easily readable for people, and who could grab the quotes and maybe help change the conversation if they got to listen to the wisdom of these great voices.
Were you surprised in 2010 with the reaction, the far-right reaction that we've been having to deal with here and Obama's had to deal with and the whole progressive movement's had to deal with?
Simply, yes, it does. That, again, caused how did that happen? How did it get this way? And what could I do? Was I going to be able to stop Fox News? No, not personally, but here is something that I could do. And, the importance of what one person can do, here's what I can do. I can help remind us of what our great traditions and progressive heritage are.
And why is that so important, this reminding people or reclaiming progressive history in the United States?
Because of the shift that's been so far away and sort of the half-truths, the distorted stories, the forgetting. I mean, it's so It's so easy to forget, as you well know, in this 24-hour news cycle, something that happens 2 days ago can be forgotten. Imagine if you're trying to remind someone of fighting Bob La Follette, or even, you know, a Franklin Roosevelt seems like, you know, ancient history, and yet it was so much a part of what I knew and what shaped my understanding of the great things that the progressive voice has fought for over the course of, you know, the last 100, 120 years.
Yeah, a lot of it tends to be forgotten. And then there's also this problem of people on the right trying to make the word progressive into such a pejorative.
A bad word. And where and how did that happen? And that, again, I scratched my head and said, was I the only one who remembered, you know, growing up in having city parks available to me as a child, the public library that was available for, you know, summers that you would, you know, spend your time at, all the things that, you know, that your friends were, you know, had the mom who was the city health nurse who came and talked to your class. And why did all of a sudden that become bad? And how had that happened? And when I remembered it as being such a strong part and important part of what was a middle class existence for me that I could witness disappearing.
I'm speaking with Joanne Boyer. She's the author of a new book called Wisdom of Progressive Voices. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at The Progressive Magazine. And this is Progressive Radio, so there's three in a row. Tell me a little bit about your dad. You dedicate the book to your dad, and you quote a couple things that he said. What was he like?
A very, you know, unique person. He grew up at the turn of the last century, orphaned when he was 3 years old. And back in times when the orphan trains and that were part of American history, and he was shipped off to relatives, and so grew up in the 20s and the 30s. And because of the kind of crazy lifestyle and the brothers and sisters looking after one another, he never finished his high school education until he was almost 20 years old. And I think that stuck for him, the importance of education. And that was something that he just stressed to us, all three of us growing up, that education for education's sake. And he, when he finally did finish getting his degree, as I say, it finally took him till 1938 before he got his degree from Marquette University. But he became a high school chemistry teacher, and he did that by day. But at night, he would come home after school. He'd catch a couple hours of sleep, and he would go off and then work third shift in a foundry that was within walking distance of our house. And he would work third shift making frames for General Motors cars. So he was a member of a teacher's union. He was a member of a machinist's union. And it just brought a unique perspective into our household of the importance of the working man, the importance of unions. And he just, and through all of that, again, it was just education. Education is something no one can ever take away from you, was always what he said to us.
And it's interesting because those two things that were so important to him and that he imparted to you, Joanne Boyer, the importance of unions, the importance of education, are so under assault right now.
And as I say in the introduction to my book, never in my life did I think I would find myself having to defend, whether in print or in conversation, education, middle class, working people, peace, tolerance, all of the things that were just, again, for lack of a better word, taken for granted as, well, of course that's what you do. And now they're just under assault, and it boggles the mind.
What's behind this assault on public education? Because growing up, I too, you know, that was just an accepted positive value in the United States. And now the right wing here, Governor Walker in Wisconsin, but across the country, are just going after it, you know, with tongs and knives and nails and hammers.
And you would hope that the fight pushback would come, because think of the founding of the country and the land-grant universities and the importance of education from the founding fathers and the whole idea of an educated public. I must scratch my head and say, how does it happen? I mean, to me, I always think it's the privatization and someone seeing a way to make, you know, a profit off of education. But the concept of the common good, the commons, the public education, so much ingrained, as I say, you just go back and look at the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you know, fanfare for the common man. Public education is just an intricate core of all of that.
Speaking with Joanne Boyer, she's the author of a new book called Wisdom of Progressive Voices. I'm asked a lot, you know, how do you define progressive? So why don't I throw that at you? What's your definition of progressive?
That's a great question. And for me, I think it's kind of embedded within the root of the word is progress. How do we progress through life? For me, and I kind of outline that a little bit in the book, is sort of, you know, there was a regressive conversation that still is so rampant. You want to take us back to the way it was. Well, no, we progress forward. That's what progress is all about. And I think for me, a progressive is someone who understands sort of inherently the interconnectedness of everything and everybody to the world, to each other. And again, a common ground, if that you understand that we are more alike than we are different, and that any kind of a voice that speaks to common ground, and that we can have discussions if they're not rooted in hatred. I mean, I would say hatred sort of tears at the fabric of the soul, and that's not what a progressive is about. And then education is right there, that an educated mind is what brings the wisdom to the conversation. And peace. You have to have an understanding that peace in absolutely every sense of the word is more profitable than war.
Joanne Boyer, this is a book where you make selections. It's always hard to make selections. You have 23 progressives that you've chosen in this book to profile. How did you make those choices?
As I started to come up with the list of who did I know, who was I influenced by, and you just started laying them out, and then all of a sudden you looked at what made a sort of a natural timeline to try and tell the story. And then what I tried to do was make it a representative sample. I wanted to make sure that I had environmental voices, social justice voices, political voices, women's voices. I mean, someone like a Jane Addams from the turn of the last century, right up to Grace Lee Boggs, who's still with us in her 90s, talking the progressive voice, to make sure to have different faiths represented. The other thing that I struggle with so much is who decided that, you know, they have the right voice today of what a spiritual or religious voice is going to say. So we have a variety and a sampling of different faiths. So it was a struggle, because especially when you move up into the 1960s and all of a sudden you're looking at all of those, and you had to say, well, you've got, if I put in Hubert Humphrey and if I put in Eugene McCarthy and I put in Paul Wellstone, that's too heavy on one state. So not that there aren't other progressive voices out there, and you'll note on the cover of the book we say Volume 1. And so with the hopes that those who were left out on this point, this time around, will get their voices heard next time.
And tell me about your decision not to take it all the way back to like Thomas Paine or Thomas Jefferson.
Exactly. You want to have to kind of rein this in to make sense from like a book standpoint. What would grab the reader's attention and what made the most sense? I mean, you think of Nelson Mandela, you think of that. I thought, well, I can't go quite international. You know, Gandhi, who could be more on for peace than Gandhi? And I just said, no, let's rein this in. Let's keep it focused, because again, I was think back to 2010, and you're in this American political scene again, and I thought, too many great American progressive voices. And I guess my Wisconsin roots also show, because to me that's fighting Bob La Follette and the start of what was the American progressive movement. Mm-hmm. So we started with fighting Bob, and we bring it up to and close the book out with Howard Zinn.
Two of my great heroes and huge figures in the 20th century, and Howard Zinn spanning into the 21st century, who's been gone now about a year and a half, and I got to say, I miss the guy almost every day.
To know that actually having heard him speak several times was also one of the thoughts that you had is who's capturing all of these people's wisdom before they die, and then he's gone.
It's really important to do that, I think. And you've collected quotations from the people you profile. And a lot of those are really inspirational and profound. Was there someone that you profiled that you didn't know that much about going in, who you kind of fell in love with as you were going?
There were a couple, because again, you forget, you know the name, and then you have to kind of refresh your memory of it. And for me, the number one that comes to mind is Louis Brandeis. And again, that era, just like the 1960s, had its huge progressive influence. So too did it back then, when you had him come to the Supreme Court with Woodrow Wilson as president and stay through the whole New Deal. And just his passion, his commitment to just absolutely everything that touches our lives today, and the imprint he had, and his sort of leery and weary caution on corporations and on banking. And you think back to that, and you see what's happening now, and you realize the foresight the man had to know that these were important to have in place in the 1930s, and had they been left alone and the Glass-Steagall not repealed, we would maybe not be in the mess that we are today.
Can you grab a quote from your book from Brandeis? I know I meant to read that big biography on Brandeis that came out just within the last year, and I haven't got around to it. Maybe it was too big for me, but I did see some Brandeis in the old issues of The Progressive, and I was astonished at how wise he was across not just constitutional issues but labor issues.
And I think that probably the shortest one I have in the book, because that's also what I wanted to do, was give you more, much more than just "I have a dream" or "Ask not what your country can do." I wanted to give you, the reader, meaty quotes that they could reflect on, be inspired by, think about. But here's one of the shorter ones in the book, and just think about him having said this back in the 1930s. "We may have democracy, or we may have wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both." This one, too, because I think, again, of what he said back in the 1930s and how appropriate it is today. "I feel very sure that people like us ought not to buy and sell stocks. We don't know much about the business, and beware people who think they do. Prices of stocks are made. They don't grow, and their fluctuations are not due to natural causes."
Yeah, I saw that one when I was leafing through it this morning, and brought a smile to my face, because I remember in 1929 or something, one of the richest men in the country was getting his shoes shined, and the shoe person doing the shoe shining was giving him stock advice, and he said at that point he realized that things have gotten really out of control. Maybe it was kind of a bigoted thing for him to say, but I remember him saying it, and that just kind of bounces off that quote. And the other one that you read at first from Brandeis on concentrated wealth and democracy is so true, so pertinent today. That's what's shocking on some of these quotes that you've yanked, that they are so relevant with this problem we have in this country where we're not a democracy. We have a democracy in form, but not in substance, not in practice. We have these huge corporations that are dominating the country, and Fighting Bob LaFalle talks about that in your book, Wisdom of Progressive Voices, and Brandeis does, and so many others do too. And it's really shocking how far we've come from that dream of democracy. Eugene V. Debs is in there also. And this was a huge theme of his. Why don't you talk about him for a second?
Well, my favorite story that I love to tell about Eugene V. Debs, I mean, one of my heroes, but my youngest daughter, who came home last summer and sort of saw in my office as I had just stacks of books just all over the floor as I was, she picked one up on Eugene V. Debs, and she just went, "Oh, Mother, don't you know that they keep track of people who check out books on Eugene V. Debs?" And you just wanted to say he wasn't. I mean, and then you want to just laugh and say, but if people would read about his life and would read about what he said, how is it that someone with that much common sense, that much vision, could have been so labeled as just a socialist, which was, you know, such the bad word? And he's not. He's just incredibly well thought out. And, I would, in a sense, challenge someone to read some of the quotes we have in the book on Eugene V. Debs and tell me where you think he's off base.
But, of course, he was a socialist.
No, yeah, right, which is, and he says, Howard Zinn says, yes, let's talk about socialism. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a socialist. So one of mine, again, favorites from Eugene V. Debs: "I am opposing a social order in which it is possible for one man who does absolutely nothing that is useful to amass a fortune of hundreds of millions of dollars while millions of men and women who work all the days of their lives secure barely enough for a wretched existence.
And how true that is about, you know, the hedge fund speculators and the people on Wall Street who brought down this economy. And now I read that Romney wants to get rid of capital gains tax entirely so that the people who do nothing useful all day long but get their returns on their stock investments that they have or that their parents gave them, you know, they're going to not pay any tax, whereas the person who's working, you know, 40 hours a week every week is paying at least 25%, maybe more.
Right. And what an advocate for the working class. And whether it was socialism, that's what you want to call it. I mean, advocating for the working class. And this, again, this is something he said as it related to World War I. And think again how true it is today. I think that's just the most striking thing, is how much of this can be translated into today. But here is what he said. They have taught you that it is your patriotic duty to go to war and to have yourselves slaughtered at command. And here, let me state a fact, and it cannot be repeated too often. The working class who fight the battles, the working class who make the sacrifices, the working class who shed the blood, the working class who furnish the corpses, the working class have never yet had a voice in declaring war.
That's Eugene Victor Debs, says, read by Joanne Boyer. Joanne Boyer is the author of Wisdom of Progressive Voices. She's collected some just incredibly inspirational and relevant quotes from 23 progressives over the last 100 years. And any selection is obviously going to omit some people, and I can quibble with some of the choices. Teddy Roosevelt, for instance, I know he's the great progressive in U.S. history, but he wasn't about peace. I mean, he was very... much a warmonger in many ways. So that must have been tough for you.
And it was. And I sort of stayed in my opening, my introduction too, is that I'm not trying to pass judgment on any one of these people who we presented. And again, to sort of show the complex nature of who we are, and that you can have differences and you can find common ground. And for me, for Teddy Roosevelt, it was much with his the environmental issues that he fought for, and his connection with John Muir and trying to preserve the environment and understanding that piece of it. But I would not argue with you in terms of what you just said. That is very, very accurate.
And how did you decide, you know, elected officials versus activists? I mean, you've got JFK in there. You've got Bobby Kennedy in there.
It was, again, trying to get the best mix that I could, and to try and make sure we had every era represented. And what I wanted to do was come up with a challenge to people who pick up the book. I mean, someone like you, I'm going to say, probably knows everyone who's featured in there, but even some of what I would call my best progressive friends, they'll pick up a book and they'll say, oh. And it just surprised me. They'll say, oh, I didn't know about Daniel Berrigan. And I said, how can you not know about Daniel Berrigan? But they didn't. And Grace Lee Boggs is one that doesn't come to mind for people to know of a progressive. Or they don't necessarily know that much about perhaps a Dorothy Day and the Catholic worker movement. And so, you know, again, I tried to go for the right variety, the right mix, and yet you can't help but also say those who I have like a soft spot in my heart for.
And we all have gaps, too. I mean, I was talking to, certainly I have gaps and haven't read enough about people like Brandeis, though I intend to on some year of Sundays that I get. But also, you know, I was talking to a colleague in the office who wasn't all that familiar with Jane Addams even. So you just never know, you know, where people connect and where the disconnects are, and it's important to expose people to this great, rich, progressive history in our country. And I think one of the beauties of this book, Wisdom of Progressive Voices, is that it does so. It doesn't, you don't flinch from the word progressive, and you show the continuity in subject matter and political and moral convictions that cross the century. And actually, if you go back to the beginning of the country, you know, with Jefferson talking about the risk of aristocracy or Lincoln talking about corporate power, you find the same kinds of issues represented. One, you talked about the book being representative. There's at least one area that I don't see represented here, and that's the issue of the gay rights movement. Was there a reason you didn't dive in there?
Short answer is no. I mean, it wasn't a conscious decision to leave it out. And I would say that that would be definitely something, you know, for volume two. In fact, I've had several people, you know, offer up a couple names or you know, ideas for me to think about. And one of the things at our website, I do the tab on there that's called the Progressive Profile. And what I want to do and to keep the Progressive Profile as an avenue for sort of the lesser known progressives that are out there. I'm very much looking for who are the progressive voices of today. And so that's an avenue where you can start profiling that topic or anybody else that I have left out. For example, I mean, just again, people come up to me again from being from Minnesota where I live now. How could you not put Hubert Humphrey in there? Right. Well, so I just featured him on the Progressive Profile on my website.
What is that website?
It's www.wisdomvoices.com, and you can see a blog there. We have our Progressive Profile, and then obviously information on how to order the book is at the website. So that, again, is www.wisdomvoices.com.
And you mentioned Progressive Voices of today. Who are a couple of those that come to mind?
I tell you, if you ask me what did I struggle with the most, was almost to come up with young progressive voices of today. And that's almost what I'm looking for. Because, I mean, even the final ones that I end the book with are, you know, Dennis Kucinich, Grace Lee Boggs, and Howard Zinn. Not exactly the youngest of the progressives. So, I mean, what comes to mind on a national scene more, but again, it's Bernie Sanders, it's Sherrod Brown out of Ohio, you know, that type of thing. That I'm still looking for those.
Amy Goodman, but you know, even these are in their 50s or 60s. So there are a lot of people out there who are doing good work, though. And there's a magazine called Color Lines that shows a lot of people who are doing good work, and there are other writers for progressive magazines that are younger who are doing some interesting work. I think of Dave Zirin, the left-wing sports writer
at the Nation.
Yeah.
Yes.
And The Nation also has a list of the 50 most important progressives of the 20th century, a list compiled by Professor Peter Dreyer. And so people can find that at thenation.com and more at wisdomvoices.com, which is your website, Joanne Boyer. I just want you and the minute and a half left that we have just to talk once more about why it's so important that we connect with our tradition and claim it as our tradition, this progressive tradition in this country, as opposed to the other narratives that are out there from the right.
Well, again, I think the other thing that I like about this book is the storytelling and just the critical part that storytelling plays in our lives as a whole. But for me, I think from a progressive standpoint is that I'd like to think of it that is if we fail to tell the story of what the progressive voice, the progressive movement is, was, and will be, we not only run the risk of losing the memory of what it brought us as a society, but we could lose something even deeper. And that, to me, is the values, the common purpose, the shared sacrifice that brought heart and meaning to our lives. And that, to me, would be the greater loss that we would have. And that, I hope, never slips away from us.
Yeah, I have that same hope. And Joanne Boyer, unfortunately, we're out of time, but thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Matt, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.